Hey, this is Bill Selleck Talks. My name is Bill Selleck. This is me talking. So I'm going to jump in and talk about my goals for the 2021-2022 school year. What is the point of me sharing my goals with you? Well, for a few reasons. Hopefully, as you are in a leadership role or an othership role, you might look at some of these and go, oh, wow, like that's something that should be on my radar. Also, if you're specifically a director of technology, I think it's important that we just share what our goals are, to know what the scope of our work might be and where we do or don't see ourselves in spaces. I think I could go pretty deep into each one of these, and maybe I will. Maybe that could be, you know, part of the theme of this year's podcast is actually talk about these goals in a little more detail. But I'm going to try and just keep it pretty high level, and we're going to jump in. Are you ready? Actually, it doesn't matter if you're ready or not. We're going to jump in. So my first goal, this is going to sound familiar from last year, is advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion work as an educator. You hopefully know about this, have heard about it as DEI, sometimes as DEIJ, which adds justice to it. There have been two different pieces of media that have really shaped and kind of reframed how I look at technology through a DEI lens. First one is a Netflix documentary, Coded Bias. If you've not watched this, like, add it to your list. If you're driving, pull over real quick or pause me and set a reminder to watch this documentary. If you care about ed tech at all, this is so important. A woman was working on a project at MIT. As it turns out, facial recognition software was not working well for her. And as it turns out, she is a Black woman. I'll give you one guess who wrote the software for facial recognition and who were the test subjects. Did you say it out loud? If you said white men, you would be correct. So me as a white man, I never noticed that facial recognition didn't work because it was written by people that look like me and was tested on people that look like me. Not exclusively, but the vast majority of work around facial recognition was looking at white men, written by white men. So why does this matter as a tech director at a K-8 school? Also, so many reasons, right? It's a reminder to me that all technology is biased. And so as I look at what our teachers use and what our students use, both for hardware and software, it's that moment of where is the bias? And how does that impact students, right? Second example I have for you is a great book, also an audiobook, if you are a listener, as I am. It is called Algorithms of Oppression by Dr. Noble. And it looks at a lot of different ways that software, and specifically, in many examples, are Google search, what the bias is with that. If you've never thought of Google search as heavily biased, Please listen. I think this impacts nearly every educator. I've begun referring to Google search as commercial search because there's absolutely an agenda there. Like, obviously, they're a company. Their goal is to make money. They're not just there out of the goodness of their heart. And so looking more critically at what the search results are, looking at how they're biased, and then as we introduce commercial search to students, being mindful and thoughtful and purposeful with how we talk about the bias built into that, so that something even as simple as thinking about my daughter who's now in fourth grade, if she just types in beautiful woman, what appears, right? That is heavily curated and absolutely purposeful from Google if she's doing a Google search, right? Nearly all search is you know, heavily biased. But looking at that and then having those conversations with our students and with our teachers around the bias built in to those algorithms. The book dives into Google search and is great, but it's also, you know, a bigger picture. You know, who's writing the code, who's making those algorithms, and who does it include, who does it exclude? It's important stuff. Two other quick things about this big bucket of making our school more inclusive. a specific thing I'm looking at, and I've done a presentation on this and also have an upcoming presentation at Fall Q with the illustrious Heather Stinnett. Last year she was third grade teacher and did a phenomenal job teaching. Now she is associate head of lower school at Hillbrook. So it's fun getting to work with her in a variety of capacities and also to present with her. The buckets of our presentation are looking at ways to increase accessibility aurally with sound, visually, and then also looking at just the built-in iOS accessibility features. And so the two quick examples I have for you around aural or audio accessibility is just to use a microphone when you can, right? So if there's an event that has 10 or more people, I am working hard to actually make sure there is a microphone and to, I think this is the right verb, to instruct people to use that microphone. I'm learning that it's not enough just to say, here is a microphone, because often people don't realize that not using a microphone is lack of inclusivity, right? There's a couple different reasons for that. But using a microphone when there is one is a very simple way to make your classroom, your school, your presentation more accessible and more inclusive. Visually, it can be just as simple as turning on closed captioning. If you're watching a video, captions are always on. If you're just talking, a great workaround for that is to open up Google Meet, turn on captioning. It doesn't even matter what the camera is. Just as you're talking, it is captioning. So simple, and it makes a big, big difference. The last thing in this bucket of advancing DEI work as an educator is that for the second year, I am going to be on our employee DEI committee. We meet about monthly, talk about, you know, a variety of things, both in our community and more broadly in education. The one thing that I think is most interesting so far and has impacted my work so far the most has been what we're calling the DEI lens. So this is a series of questions that we ask theoretically before we make any decision. I think it definitely applies to school boards. So, you know, before they vote on something, to actually look, and, you know, a couple examples are, you know, who's excluded from this, whose voice was not included in making the decision, you know, who's disenfranchised if we make this decision. And just being able to have that conversation, I think, as part of decision-making as an educator, maybe just as a human, is really important. And so it's that kind of check of, you know, even if you don't have diverse group of people in the room making the decision, to think about that diversity, the who's included and who's not included as we make these decisions is an important thing. So that's that bucket, advancing DEI work. Second bucket, and this one shows up almost every year in my professional goals as director of technology, is upgrade and fine-tune Hillbrook's technology infrastructure. So my job at most independent schools, this is the case. At bigger districts, these are definitely several roles. But there you can think of my job as kind of a Venn diagram with two big buckets. The one is the actual kind of educator side, right? So what devices do we use? How do we use them? Why do we use them? How do we do exciting, innovative, student-driven things with devices? That's awesome. Like, I love that part. The other part is actually the infrastructure. So, you know, how do we get internets, as my mom calls them, how do we get the internets onto campus, right? What's the actual, like, physical layout of all the cabling and the wires? How do the wires connect to network switches? How do the network switches connect to wireless access points? Which wireless access points? How quickly do we update all of those? Just the whole, like, nervous system of data at our school. And this is one of those that as each year passes, you know, this is my 8th year at Hillbrook. Can you believe it? No, neither can I. It goes by so quickly, and there's so many thoughts around that. But I have found that if you want students to actually use technology regularly. And if you want teachers to consistently use technology, having a reliable Wi-Fi infrastructure makes a big, big difference. And it's really incredibly complicated to make that consistent and consistently good for everybody. And so just, you know, continuing to look at what the Wi-Fi is, you know, even just last night as I record this, we updated our firmware, but it was also working with Navani is the company that we contract out with for kind of the heavy lifting for the deep IT stuff. Because I definitely have an understanding of it all, but I am not going to actually, you know, connect directly to a network switch and configure ports. That is not my jam. Navani is very good at that. They are far more knowledgeable than I would be in a number of years, and they are very fast at it. And so, you know, we continue to work with Navani with a monthly contract for them to do like the deep systems side and IT side and like, you know, network sysadmin stuff. That's short for system administration. But working at what that's going to look like. And in this particular case, checking in with their CTO, Ryan, and saying, hey, you know, here's the versions of our firmware. We're going to upgrade. And, you know, and him knowing, yeah, you know, these other schools have upgraded to this firmware version. This is good to go. And the firmware is the actual like software that lives on the wireless access points. And so upgrading those and then checking with a couple different spaces before students came in this morning to make sure that they were actually working. So you know, you can like run a report and see, you know, this one was having errors with here, that one was having errors like that. It gets super nerdy super quickly, but again, it's one of those things that makes Wi-Fi more reliable. The other big thing we're going to be looking at this year is looking at our server room. So over the last 7 years, a lot more stuff, as you might imagine, has moved from on-premises to cloud. So I think the biggest example for us has been Jamf. That stands for just another management framework. It is how we manage all of our iPad and Apple laptops. How we can, you know, say, here are the apps, update the apps, I forgot my passcode, unlock it. I'd like to get Final Cut Pro or Photoshop, push that to a laptop. All that stuff, all that's done with Jamf. And we used to actually have our server physically on campus. And we've moved to cloud-based hosting. And we're seeing that, you know, kind of again and again. And so I think it's going to be looking a bit harder about what actually is on-premises and what we can move to the cloud. A lot has moved to the cloud, but a surprising amount still needs to be on campus, right? So, you know, at home you have just your router. And so you're like, the Wi-Fi isn't working. You unplug one thing and replug one thing. It's way more complicated on campus. And so it's looking at which of those pieces need to be on campus. You know, like getting a valid IP address, that's an entire server at our school. It's the DHCP server. So actually looking at, you know, like that's going to stay on campus, but what might we be able to move to cloud-based just to continue to make it more reliable, to shrink what might be on-premises. So that's much heavier in the IT realm, but this feels like an important time to talk about that. The third goal I have, and there's just one more after this, the third goal is supporting our new tech support specialist. So Manuel has been here for about a month now, almost exactly a month. Is this his month anniversary? We should have bought a cake. I wonder if we can order a cake. I'm not going to get a cake. Maybe I will send him an e-card. And what does my dad do? Like Blue Mountain cards or something? Email him and then he has to click on it and it opens a virtual card and says, you've been here a month. Happy month anniversary at Hillbrook. Anyway, Manuel and I have been meeting just about daily, going over essential systems. We're meeting daily. We have a weekly check-in set up. The big part of this goal is just to make sure that I'm mindful that Manuel is new, that this role is new for him at Hillbrook, and just, you know, kind of putting my manager hat on, which is hard because I'm wearing headphones, but putting my management hat on and just making sure that he's supported in the ways that he needs to be supported, and that, you know, he's able to do the work that he wants to be able to do, and that, yeah, that it continues to go well. He is so great. So great. Our last goal we're going to talk about together, is the next steps with the hub. So as you have hopefully been following along, in I think the end of 2015, we started meetings about the needs and spaces, you know, with science, with making kind of maker space and wood shop and 3D printing and laser cutting and art, all of those. And we ended up building a thing we called the hub. It's amazing. It took, you know, from those first meetings about 5 years to actually build. And it's an extraordinary space. When I refer to the hub, we have a handful of different classrooms. We have the big room that's like a big double-story room. Adjacent to that is the hub studio down below. Just above that is the hub loft. There's a standalone room called the hub classroom. And then if we go back to the hub loft, that's upstairs. It actually connects with what used to be our library. It has a beautiful picture of an oak tree with birds that are actually like books opened up. Imagine just opening a book and it kind of looks like a bird with an oak tree. We call it the oak room because of that. And so that space, you know, has some audio, some video work. There's a giant green screen. The hub loft is, you know, 3D printers, laser cutting, electronics, design, vinyl cutters, you know, large format printer. Downstairs, the hub studio is going to be the messier work. So, you know, the paints mostly. The big room, that big kind of double story space, is mostly the woodworking. So it's going to be the loudest and the dustiest space. The hub classroom is mostly science right now. We're putting a laser cutter in that room in the next month. And also just, we're still trying to figure out what technology lives there, you know, bigger picture. And if I stop kind of explaining all the spaces and just focus on kind of the big picture, the goal this year, now that we have it, it opened just about a year ago, you know, October, November 2020, which is a really weird time to open a collaborative space for making. Such a weird time. Like, I don't know. I think if you wanted to make the most exciting building I think our school has ever built, the most anticlimactic moment, it would be like October 2020. You know, even in that space, we weren't able to really collaborate at all last year with our stable cohorts that were separate and never mixed. So this year, what does that look like? You know, I think it's creating experiences for employees, right? Not just faculty, not just our teachers, for everybody that works at Hillbrook, so that they see themselves as makers, so they see themselves in that space. Ultimately, it's the goal of teachers bringing students in. The big room is a space that we never actually book with a class, and so any teacher at any time can bring a handful of students over. There's, you know, space to the north, to the west, to the south, you know, so theoretically, you know, we could have like a class inside the big room, north, west, and south of it. You know, it's like four different classes going on kind of at once. I don't know that we're ever going to get to that or that we would want that. But the idea that, you know, that if you bring some students over, there's a space for you to work on stuff, I think that's really, really exciting. This is also one of those where it's definitely working with other people on our senior leadership team to make sure that we're really using the space, both from kind of an academic or a program side, but also just as like, you know, we built this thing, like, how do we make this like who we are at Hillbrook? You know, how do we get to the point at the end of this year where we're like, how did we ever do school without the hub, right? So I'm thinking a lot about that one. And there's definitely, that one is not like a check. The hub is done. You know, it's like a living it out every day, every week, every month, every year kind of goal. But I'm excited about that one. So those are my goals for the year, for the 2021-2022 school year. If you're listening to that and you're like, hey, did you ever think about, did you ever consider, how come you're not talking about this? Or I noticed you mentioned that. Are you also doing something else? Oh my goodness, please reach out to me. And this isn't like a way that, you know, leave a message and a note and give us a 5-star rating on the whatever. This is like a legit, you know, if you listen to that and have some feedback, like I would love to hear it. Hopefully some of those as you listen to it. Ready for the closing music? Yeah, you are. As you listen to it, you're like, you know what? I think there's something there for me. You know, like maybe I'm a tech director. Never thought about actually DEI work being kind of at the heart of what I do. You know, feel free to steal any of these goals. I would love to hear about, you know, how these might impact your work. So that is all for this week. I think I'm going to dig in and talk a little bit more about these goals in future episodes. So thanks for listening. This is Bill Selleck Talks.